This is the September 12 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Bill Biederman of AgMarket.net out of Spring City, Tennessee, Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. She's in Hollister, Missouri. And Sherman Newland is at Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. I know that today's USDA report release will be on the list of items we should discuss, so we'll go through that. But what are the other things that might be top of mind for you? I think, Bill Biederman, we'll start with you.
Well, I think the top of the list would be international trade policy, and can we get some deals put together? I mean, we're going to be in a, I mean, President Trump is in a position now that he's never been in before. I mean, he's finally in a position where everybody wants a deal. Maybe he can get it done. If he does, it's going to be a big, big win for ag.
Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing.
I'd like to talk about South America and its impact on the bean market. And Bill pretty much cleared up my other point. That's what I want to talk about, too.
And Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities.
Yeah, I think something that's on my back burner is the weather in Brazil and South America and what that might lead up to. You know, and then like these guys said, you know, more hopefully deals going on with China, and if Trump can pull something off there.
Let's begin with this morning's USDA report. This, of course, being recorded on Thursday afternoon. Bill Biederman, you took a look at those numbers in the executive summary. Was there anything that jumped out at you?
The main thing that jumped out at us was the pod weight used by the USDA, which, you know, they had the lowest pod weight in 6 years, but they had a record pod count. I'm sorry, in 6 years, but they had a record pod weight. So, you know, I know some of their logic is that, well, usually when we go out in the next month, you know, there's been more pods set, so we're adjusting the idea that there could be more pods with a higher weight, and we'll bring the weight back down, and it'll all come out the same. I don't think I would agree with that, especially this year. We've had we flew over 224,000 acres just last week. We've had a guy out checking our GPS coordinates throughout the whole Corn Belt, and I can pretty much guess that these pods are done setting.
So are you of the opinion, and USDA had put in the executive summary, a slide, I think, that showed every year since 13, and 13 was the only year where both number of pods and the pod weight went down. Every place else, pod count went up and pod weight went down. Are you of the mind that both might go down this year?
No. I don't know. That's a good question, Todd. I'm not sure. I mean, I can tell you what we came up with on our numbers. They're below USDA, but that doesn't mean anything. You know, USDA's numbers are their numbers. But I do think, just looking at that graph that you're referring to, just to get it down to the average weight would be likely. I mean, we're hearing a lot of reports that, you know, some guys are shutting down early. A lot of beans are turning, and those beans aren't fully filled out, and they're concerned about BBs. Now, we won't know for another 3 weeks, but my point is that even if you just move this down to the median range, that's a 10% adjustment in weight. So it could be significant. I mean, 10% of 3 billion bushels, you do the math.
Right, so that'd be a pretty good-sized number. You did mention that soybeans were beginning to turn. I made a trip through the countryside just offhanded a couple of times this week on my way to work, and, of course, there are beans that are yellow. There's a bean field that's not all that far, actually, from being ready to harvest, which surprised me. I think, Sherman, I want to check in with you to see what conditions for soybeans are like in your area. You're a bit further south than I am.
I mean, some of them are starting to turn. I mean, the beans we planted in late or mid-May, or they're turning. And then even some of the beans we planted in June are surprisingly, they're starting to turn. But I'd echo the fact that, you know, yeah, beans seem to be shutting down right now, running out of time. I'd also, you know, echo what Bill's saying about on the pod count and the pod weight. I do wonder if that's going to end up, you know, being lower. I do know when we were out west on the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, that is one thing we found was, you know, less pods. Everywhere we stopped, we had a lower pod count. And we also noticed that they weren't blooming. So at that point, you know, they weren't really going to be putting on a whole lot more pods. And, you know, I've had guys mention that to me around here, too, that they were out a couple of weeks ago. Their, you know, beans were still trying to put on a few more pods. But since then, they went back out and they seemed to have aborted. So, you know, I do question whether or not that this bean yield won't come down later on for all those, you know, things that we just talked about and just the lateness of the planting of the crop. And, you know, and nobody is, you know, in the report even mentioned the fact that as of the crop ratings and conditions as of Monday, there's still what, roughly 6 million acres of beans that hadn't even started to set pods. So I think somewhere down the road, that's all going to, you know, rear its head and become an issue.
Jackie Vakes, if you've got the numbers from USDA for soybeans in front of you, those crop production figures, can you run through that and the differences that you saw in the numbers, for instance, the yield drop, and of course, production for the year, and the ending stocks numbers dropped too?
They did. The production came in at 3.633. It was at 3.680 in August, and so it's down slightly. They dropped the yields from 48.5 last month down to 47.9. Not a real significant drop as far as that goes. When you look at the ending stocks on 18-19 on beans, it dropped down to just a hair over a billion. It had been a billion and 70 last month, so there were some adjustments made there. And 19-20, which is by far the most important, is at 640. That's down from 755. So, I mean, that's a reflection, of course, of the drop in production. I want to make a comment, though, about the pod weights. I believe that the pod weights are high. I'm not disagreeing with Sherm or Bill. But at the same time, I recognize that the hybrids that we have nowadays are amazing. And when you have a crop that's as short as we have, and hasn't put all its energy into height, a lot of its energy goes into filling out pods. I've seen it before. And so even though I do believe they're going to come down from where they are, I don't think they may not be as far off, at least in the fields that they review, you know, not compared to the rest of the U.S.
Well, let's talk about this just a bit. We could argue about what the pod weight means, but really it's about the 47.9, right? How close is that at this point? And I want to get an idea. I guess, Jackie, do you think that will change very much in October, November?
I think it's going to go down. I think we're probably going to look at maybe another bushel lower, about 47, somewhere in that neighborhood. I just think that for a number of reasons, the number of the things that Sherm talked about and the 6.4 million acres that are just starting to set pods right now, you know, our days are getting shorter. Beans depend entirely on sunshine to be able to finish out. And anything that's really behind is going to have a tough time. It's not like corn, you know, where we're looking at heat units. This is all about sunshine. And so we've had some good days. I just don't know if we have good enough. And we'll have a long enough time to be able to do it.
Bill Biederman, your forecast for yield and what USDA will end up with?
Well, it's going to be lower. It's, you know, I'd hate to say what I think it could be, but I guess I'm kind of the opinion after flying over the entire Corn Belt, including the Dakotas and Nebraska, all the way to Ohio, and then sending a guy out in a car checking the fields. And we keep track of, you know, how many one bean pods there are, two bean pods, three bean pods, four bean pods. I think there's going to be a fairly significant revision, but it may not happen until, you know, next March. You know, it might be in residual.
Oh, and the grain stocks numbers at some point.
I think it's going to lean to the lower side here eventually. I mean, I think we put out 46 for a yield on our estimates here the other day. But depending on how we finish, you know, I guess that's going to be a lot of it. I, you know, like Jackie said, those beans that are just setting pods, they're just not going to have enough time, in my opinion, to end up yielding much of anything at all. That's if we don't get an early frost. I mean, nobody's really calling for that right now, but if something like that would happen, then I think it could reduce the yield even more. But, I mean, I've heard some guys throw out a 42 for a national average. I think that's really on the low side. I'm not even going quite that low. But, you know, in that 45, 46, you know, maybe even the 47, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
Todd, this elderly gentleman that we had out running to GPS coordinates, he basically called last night and he says, "Well, I'm done." So I started laughing. I'm, "Okay, that's good." I said, "Why?" He says, "Because about 75% of the fields I'm going to are starting to show yellow." He says, "Whatever's out there is what's out there, and there's not going to be any more pods." So he says, "I've counted enough of these," and he had. He'd been to like six states, so.
Yeah, so what route was he running? Where was he when he said he was done?
Well, he started in southern Ohio and went up to towards Indianapolis, over to St. Louis, into Missouri, back up through Hannibal, up into Iowa, back over to the east again all the way, and then he went up one more jog and went all the way to the west. So he covered a lot of ground.
He was in the Northwest when he said he was done. I was wondering what that looked like, and I thought that might be the case, that he would have been in the Northwest. Now, we've talked a lot about yellow beans, but of course there are still a lot more green beans out there than there are yellow, at least in our area at this point. So it all needs some time, but as Jackie said, it needs sunshine, and that just physically won't happen because we're getting shorter days at this point. So we turn our attention to the corn market then, and to the corn numbers from USDA. I think, Jackie, I'll let you start with those, because these numbers have been better for a good portion of the year than many people had thought they should be. They were been adjusted, and producers are still not sure that USDA has this number right. What you think of today's report?
Well, I was kind of surprised. I guess I expected to see corn yield go down by an additional bushel, but they came out with 13.799 billion bushels, 168.2 for a yield. They did make some pretty significant adjustments on the 18-19 crop, which pushed our carryout to 2.446, and therefore I was very, very impressed with the fact that when you look at 2019-20, we came in at a carryout of 2,190,000,000, which is only 9 million higher than we had in August. And so we had good export numbers, you know, 2,060 for 18-19 is what they came in at. We're at 2,050 right now, so I think that we could see an increase there. But when it comes to the numbers, this is tough. I was looking at the changes that they made. I mean, Illinois, they dropped 10.4 million bushels of production. Indiana, 24.5 million bushels of production. Michigan, 11.9. Minnesota, 14.8. So they've made some pretty significant drops as far as individual state production goes. Even Texas was 10.2 million lower. So I don't know. The argument has been all along that they're reporting too many acres, basically, is what it is. And our clients, prior to this whole debate beginning, a lot of them switched and planted more corn than they did beans. That's what was going on throughout the whole thing. And it wasn't just for the insurance side of it. They were switching corn to beans long before the insurance thing was really a big issue. And so I don't know. I been around them long enough to know that they don't make dramatic changes quickly, but I also know the information comes from the farmer, it comes from surveys, and it comes now this time, of course, from people who are actually out on the ground. So I anticipate it's still going to go down.
Hey, Bill Biederman, I want to ask you about ethanol really quickly and whether you think that the USDA adjusted the ethanol figures enough or too much at this point. And I ask this whether it adjusted it enough for a particular reason, because on August 20th, Poet announced that it was going to shut down the Cloverdale, Indiana plant. That's not all that far from us. That was, in their estimation, a 30 million bushel shutdown when it's finished. And then in the news release, and I went back to read it today, they said an additional, not total, but an additional 100 million bushels of slowdown. For, and you'll have to assume it's for the current marketing year because now we're in that, that's 130 million bushels just out of Poet, out of one company. Do you think USDA has made a big enough adjustment for ethanol?
I think they made exactly to our number on the old crop, But on the new crop, I do not think they've come down enough unless they know some kind of a policy change or some kind of an enforcement that, we don't know about. Our ethanol number is an additional 70 bushels below USDA for new crop. We're at 5380 for ethanol usage.
So you would have had, what, 70 and 25, so you would have had 95 million bushel adjustment this time around.
Yes, that's correct. And, you know, but so many things can change, right, Todd? I mean, maybe the ethanol industry, which right now is in overproduction, maybe we retire some of these older plants. That, you know, we built these new plants. We were going to retire. I believe there's four older plants that never did retire. Maybe we'll retire those and get this supply and demand a little bit more in line. But, you know, honestly, what we all want and what we all want to see is we got a law. Let's enforce it. You know, let's not say you can't kill people, but then give exemptions.
The Trump administration has been working on that, though, to this point, and we'll see on Friday whether there is a deadline on it, according to the Trump administration.
Yeah, but we loved how he came out and said that. Here's the deal, take it or you know, deal with me.
Yeah. So. Yeah, so we'll see what happens tomorrow. To this point, I think the ethanol industry was meeting again, maybe today, but they certainly have to be talking about this. They rejected what the original thoughts were, I think, sometime last week. So we still have to work through a lot of that ethanol set of numbers. But, Bill, come back and go through some of these numbers for the corn and what your assessment was of the report today.
Well, I think they made a step in the right direction. I think the corn industry is really in a rough position because of the demand destruction where, you know, we've all been demoralized by all the terrible demand talk. Well, you know, let's remind ourselves, we just saw pretty huge increases in demand in soybeans. So life's not as bad as it seemed. But in the corn, it is a pretty real problem. And, you know, we see the numbers not too far off. I think we're at about 45. I'm just looking at our numbers. Our demand number for new crop is 45 million bushel less in total than what they have. But here's some of the things what we've written down. You know, how can we be wrong? We think that maybe there's a good chance. I mean, we surveyed our customers. My personal customers, I only have two customers with old crop inventory left. We think that the old crop quarterly stocks could be revised down. That's one thing. We think that the reason that the feed use number was so low last year was because they had to revise that to get it in line with the quarterly stocks. We think the opposite could happen this year. I mean, think about it. We had 3% more grain-consuming animal units last year, and they lowered feed use by a ton in a year where we had the coldest winter and it was hard to keep animals going. So we think that all of this could come due by either, you know, maybe the September 30th or the March 30th stocks report. So the feed use number that we're looking at, it could easily go up substantially and make up for some of this other demand loss in ethanol. But that's it. And then the export number, we believe that's going to be driven quite a bit on what the dollar does in the near term.
What are the things, yeah, Bill, and I'll get to you, Sherman, next on this, that you're looking to happen to make a difference in the marketplace?
Well, again, I usually think that policy drives a lot of things. So I feel like whatever we do with the fiscal policy and the dollar is going to help agriculture a lot because it can't hurt it much more than it is. It's at the top of a 20-year range, basically. Secondly, if they do lower the dollar, that's going to help us become more competitive. The next thing is our competitors, both Argentina has already shut down quite a bit of their corn shipments, and Brazil will between now and November. They won't start back up until February. So we're going to see a natural movement, a seasonal movement of demand to the United States. So that should help our exports, but I don't think it'll get the total number to go up unless we see some international trade deals or a lower dollar. The ethanol thing we just talked about, and the feed use thing, I really do believe that when you look at livestock numbers, the feed use, you know, feed use at 5.1 billion, when just 2 years ago we were feeding 5.3 billion, I think our 5.1 is too low, but, you know, we got to get through those quarterly stocks to see how that can change. But that'll be a foundation for us. We've gotten cheap enough. Look at a continuation chart going back several years. We've gotten nearby futures cheap enough. Take the basis off that. There's no cash grain moving here. So any adjustment downward in yield would just kind of put a little gravy on the meat.
So, Sherm, I'll come to you, and I'll give you a heads up, Jackie, because I want to talk about the end of the month grain stocks report, too, and let you go through what you think that's going to look like. But, Sherman, on these corn numbers, were you satisfied USDA pegged it today?
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping for a little bit lower number on yield, but I wasn't, you know, I wasn't too surprised. I was telling guys I figured it'd be pretty close to where it was last month, and it did come in lower, and that was enough to appease the market, I guess, that it wasn't a higher number. And I agree with Bill. I mean, with the feed usage and numbers like that, we've been scratching our head on that all year, you know, with the record number of livestock we've had out there. Well, I mean, why is the feed usage keep going down? So that may rear its head up again here later on, going down the road like that. The ethanol numbers, you know, those were disappointing. But, you know, something could probably change at some point in time with President Trump and maybe doing, you know, increasing some mandates there. So that would help when it's all said and done. So I don't think they missed it by a lot, you know, but I do think it's going in the right direction. You know, I think next month you could get another reduction. And then maybe they could reduce some harvested acres. I mean, I agree. I mean, I don't think with Jackie, I don't think they're going to change planted acres a whole lot. I mean, I don't look for those to come down at all. If anything, they could even go up a little bit for, you know, the way things could be going. You know, because I know the FSA data, their numbers are probably going higher. The guys from USDA on the tour told us that so I think acres, it's a non-event here at this moment. I think it's more about, you know, yield from here on out. I mean, for the short term, you know, test weight, small grain, you know, how we finish here, I think will all add up and make a difference to bringing in a lower yield. I mean, just for example, just some early yield data, very few reports coming in. I mean, there's a 175 to 180 over in Indiana. Where last year making 220, I mean, in southern Indiana, I heard, you know, there was a 94 where last year was over 200. So I think, you know, once the combine get rolling, that's going to kind of really tell the tale here a little bit. And hopefully, I guess, if, you know, for prices to go up, you're going to need these combines to show lower yields. And I think it's going to be entirely possible. But how much lower? Enough to move the needle? I don't know if we're going to see that, you know.
Just a note, Jackie, before you get into your assessment of the USDA report this morning, and then that grain stocks number, for both the corn and the soybeans, USDA did not make any adjustment of the acreage for either for harvested or planted, though that wouldn't be expected, I don't think, now until October, and that would normally be when they'd come back and then make some adjustments based off the FSA figures if they needed to be done. So your turn to take a look at the corn market.
One of the things that when we talk about the USDA today, I look at feed use also. And the one thing that concerns me is when I look at the ratio between corn and wheat, we're starting to see wheat come into levels that we haven't seen from a competitive standpoint for quite a while. And we're hearing a lot of wheat feeding out in the West. And so if you noticed on the report, they left it the same as last month, but they still increased wheat feed by 74 million bushels. And so I think that's going to offset some of what's going on with the corn. I think that in general, we probably will see maybe a bump there. You know, the feed use number is like a miscellaneous number in a lot of ways. What Bill said is true. They make adjustments to make sure that it can, because there's no way you can really tell how much is truly being fed except using a balance sheet and trying to make it come out. And so I think in general on the corn side of things, I wasn't happy today. I was hoping it was going to be at least a bushel lower, but I'm still glad that they went the direction that they did. It wasn't the direction I expected them to go. And so I think that from an export standpoint, Mexico's really been stepping up and really been buying dramatic amounts at times. And so I think we could see an increase there too. I don't know. It's very interesting when you look at the overall picture. Exports are lumbering. There's no question. And so a smaller crop is definitely something that isn't going to hurt us if that's the case. Now, on the grain stocks report, Todd, I always look at the grain stocks report as being the most important report. You know, when it comes right down to it, because what it tells us is who owns the grain. And if we see the balance of ownership shift over to the commercial side, then you're going to see less downside than we do if it's being held in the farmer's side. And I think that's probably what we're going to see now in September, especially on the corn. It'll shift. Beans already are there. And so I would expect to see a slightly tighter number coming at the end of the month on corn. Same thing on beans. You know, and maybe that tighter number on corn is going to adjust, come into the feed adjustment. Wheat-wise, I think we might see a little tighter number there, too, because, like I said, they are feeding more wheat. I mean, we are at a 0.76. The last time that we were the lowest that we've ever been, the ratio is 0.66, and that was back in 2018 in August. Since then, we've just been above that area. So it always concerns me when we start to see wheat be a competitor for corn.
I have to ask this next question, but I need an answer from all of you. And you can take your time answering it if you want. I'll start with you, Jackie, because I know producers are going to want to know, did we put a bottom in the market? And are we counter-seasonal now?
Why did I know you were going to ask that. You know, just yesterday I said to Jeff, I said, I think when you look at this report, this is going to be more like an August report than a September report. You know, September is usually very negative, and we're usually a lot further down the road. So did we put a bottom in the market? Well, I think it's encouraging that December corn closed above the 20-day moving average for the first time since the 12th of July. November beans closed above the 45, the 50, and the 100-day, first time since July 22nd. And China came in and offered to no tariff on 5 million metric tons of beans that they want to purchase for October to December. So I think if we haven't put the bottom in the market, I guess I'd be surprised. Let's just put it that way.
Bill Biederman?
I'll say a resounding yes on both without question. You've got 9 million acres as of last week that hadn't even gotten to the dent stage. And, you know, that's 1.5 billion bushels of equivalent production. And if I look at the number, if I stay at the, I'm thinking north of Interstate 80 now, okay? And if I'm going to pick a temperature range of 70 to 50 degrees between now and Black Layer, which I think is kind of hard to believe we'd stay that warm, but who knows? It would still take 78 days to get there. So I just think there's a tremendous amount of risk and stress in how we finish this crop. I mean, that would equate to November 26. We're not going to make it there. I've got customers. I've got 20,000 acre customer up in North Dakota, and they're trying to find 3 self-propelled choppers because they just know it's not going to be able to make it. I mean, there's going to be some serious, hard decisions to make. Just as there were really difficult decisions in planting, and from the air, we can see every mistake and every compaction that was made. We're going to have a lot of decisions to make this fall if you live north of Interstate 80.
Yeah, I know in North Dakota, they had a 58-degree day recently with rainfall, and it was a series of days, so they've had a tough fall. We'll see how that finishes up. We need to come back around and get that answered by you, Sherman Newland, too.
Do I think the lows are in? I do think the lows are in for now. I mean, you know, unless something happens in Washington, you know, with something from Trump or something, you know, on the tariff stuff again. But I do think the lows are in. I mean, it just seemed like it was adding up this week. Come in here Monday and the crop ratings were where they were at, well, you know, behind, showing how much farther we had to go for everything to finish off and mature, kind of like Bill said, you know, and then from being out west, seeing how late some of that corn was in South Dakota, that it was going to need an extra long time to finish. You know, and funds were short. They went from long to short about 150,000. I mean, estimated they covered 18,000 today and 18,000 in beans today. I think all things added up, you know, it looks like a low has been in place. I mean, when you look at the charts, I mean, we're going to have hopefully some outside weeks up in corn and beans. So from the technical side of it, that's encouraging. You know, what I also know is, you know, to make the market go higher, we're going to have to continue to feed it, you know, and what's going to come along, you know, next week to kind of top what we've had. And right now, I'm not sure what it's going to be. But I do think, you know, we probably have seen a low.
So you all say lows are in corn and soybeans. So then the next question is, farmers have been of a mind that they're just going to keep the bin doors closed. Should they do that? And even if the lows are in, are we in a sideways building market, base building market, or do we trend higher? And why don't you go ahead and continue, Sherman, and give me your look forward into the next 3 months.
I think we're in a base. You know, like I said, we're going to need to continue to see some bullish news come along to push this market higher. But I'm not overly bullish unless we get to a point that, you know, we find out yields are a lot lower than what, you know, we're estimating right now, because you're going to need, you know, you're going to need the exports. You're going to need, you know, South America to have a potential problem going down the road. Like I said at the start of the show, that could be, you know, I know it's early, but, you know, they're pretty dry down there. And the farther they push back their bean planting, because the dryness is also going to push back their second crops of farina corn planting too. So going forward, I think that's something we really need to keep an eye on. And then just see where this can go. But I feel like we can go higher, but I'm not overly bullish. I mean, basis has been good for corn. I mean, that's been helping farmers. So as long as it stays as positive as it is, I think that's a good sign, you know, because that's always kind of tell you where things are at locally as far as the supply goes. And so, I mean, if it was such a big crop last year, why is basis so good is what we've been asking ourselves. So maybe it was overdone a little bit last year. But, you know, if we can get up into that, obviously the 390 gap on Dease corn, I think you got to take a look at making some sales for this year's crop and, you know, push some more old crop out the door if you still have it. And then if we could get to the 920 level on beans, I'd like to see that. But our basis around here is not that good on beans. You're looking 50 under for beans, so that doesn't really equate to a great price. But if we could get up that to that area, the guy probably still ought to be taking a look at making some sales in there. So,
Jackie Vakes?
Well, I know slamming the bin door shut is a common thing, especially right now when you see what's been going on and where we are price-wise. I think that I always try to help people understand you've got to watch your basis, because your basis is the indicator of demand. And basis, like Sherm said, has been really good. And why is that? That's either because a lot of the corn is gone, and we're going to find that out when we get to the end of the month, and or they're just plain not selling it. They're sitting on it. Once we start to see on a rally like today, if we see a rally of 7 cents in corn and we see a change in basis 7 cents wider, then we know that this is not something that is driving demand from them. And so I think the important part is to stay right in tune with what the futures and what the basis reaction to the futures are, and reward rallies. Doesn't mean you have to sell everything, but just reward rallies. And if you do make the sale and you feel comfortable and you're concerned about it going higher, buy a call. You know, do something like that, because we do know, you know, that there's costs associated with hanging on to the crop, whether it's sitting at home or it's sitting in the elevator. And I think there's a lot of grain that's sitting in the elevator right now.
I don't disagree with anything anybody said, and there's really no right or wrong. But our approach, you know, is to basically look at the break even. And if we can make some money and that's acceptable, then you make a sale. I mean, ideally what you know, both Sherman and Jackie have said is, ideally, if you could lock in this basis and price it out at a higher value, you'd be getting the best of two worlds. But I don't think that the timing of harvest, getting some inventory in to deliver against that, would probably work out for 90% of the people out there. But, you know, I'm pretty confident that you're going to see this market get up to levels that'll put a profit on your table. And when it does, it's probably a good idea to make some sales.
And let's get a final word from each of you. I think, Sherman Newland, I'll start with you. Any final word for the afternoon?
Well, I mean, just keep in touch with the markets. I mean, I think we've got everything going in the right direction this week. You know, we're going to hopefully have a better close for the after Friday, and just kind of stay in tune with the market. You know, like Bill said, if you and Jackie, if you can get to some levels, you know, pull the trigger, make some sales. I mean, right now, I mean, that mid $4 range sure does seem like it's out of the question again, you know, but the $3.90, $4 level would probably be a good place to pull the trigger, make some sales, kind of the same way on beans, and just kind of wait and see what happens.
Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson.
Well, I think the only way we can describe this year has been as brutal. You know, first it was bad planting situations, then we've seen disappointing futures, and some of that is related to everything else that's going on in the market too, not just to the commodities. We always have to remember we're interconnected now with the crude oil market, which has been going down, and that puts pressure on us. We're interconnected with the Dow Jones. When the Dow Jones goes down, we know they come over and get money over here. So don't always lose hope just because of what you see on the futures. It reflects a whole lot more than the commodities.
And Bill Biederman of AgMarket.net.
Well, I think, you know, a couple things. First of all, I think we did put in a short-term bottom. And if all of this is a supply-driven rally, it will be relatively short-term. In other words, it's not going to last into next spring or next summer. But if we turn the corner here and we see a shift to a demand-driven market, i.e. that can happen because of financial policy, that can happen because of trade policy, that can happen simply because we get into the fields and find out we put this crop in rough and it's going to come out really rough. It's going to come out worse than we think. And if that happens, you know, it's like telling a guy in Iowa that there's a hurricane coming and he goes, yeah, right. But then all of a sudden when the hurricane is there, they run out and they do two things. They buy food and they buy fuel. Well, if we tell the world that our crop is really bad, we don't know that yet. We're going to find out in a few weeks. But if we get a frost or something, it could happen. And if that storm were to hit Iowa, you would see the world chase food and fuel. And corn is the primary component of all food, whether it's meat or whether it's garbage bags. It doesn't matter. Corn's in it. So I think there'd be really good longer-term demand if we shift this to a demand market.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can hear the whole of our programming anytime you'd like at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Bill Biederman of AgMarket.net out of Spring City, Tennessee, Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson in Hollister, Missouri, and Sherman Newland of Risk Management Commodities out of Hudsonville, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.